This is The Checkpoint, supported by Adidas Terex, and we are Black Trail Runners. Black Trail Runners is a community and campaigning charity seeking to improve inclusion, participation, and representation of Black people in trail running. You can find us on Instagram, Facebook, and Strava by searching Black Trail Runners, on Twitter at Runners Black, or via our website, blacktrailrunners.run. And you can sign up for our trail race event, Black to the Trails, at blacktothetrails.co.uk. If something in this episode resonates with you, why not share it with us online or leave a review on the streaming platform you use as it helps our podcast to grow. Thank you for downloading this episode. Now, let's head to the conversation. Abby Hall is a professional trail runner for Adidas Terex. She started running at the age of 12 and has never stopped. She fell in love with running, both the pursuit and the community, and as an adult, continued running every night when she was living in Chicago and Los Angeles, working as a graphic designer. Abby started to make trips to the mountains on the weekends and moved to Boulder, Colorado, with a view to be part of a community eager to explore the outdoors. In Boulder, Abby signed up for a number of ultras and attended every group trail run she could find, exploring the trails and mountains. She now lives in Flagstaff, Arizona, and over the past few years has been racing all over the world. Recently, Abby has finished first at the Innsbruck Alpine Trail Festival 65K, second at the 2022 Trans Gran Canaria Classic 126K, second in the prestigious 2021 UTMB CCC race, and she has also finished Western States 100 amongst the top 30 athletes. Abby is part of the Adidas Terex United by Summits campaign and has said, "You don't have to get the FKT to inspire people. You don't have to win to inspire people. You inspire people by how you move through things, not by what you do." Abby Hall, welcome to the Checkpoint podcast.
Thanks for having me on. Happy to be here today.
We're really, really excited to have you. So thank you for being here, and thank you for waking up early, because I know you're in the US. It's the afternoon here for us, so we appreciate you putting your alarm clock on this morning.
It's a great way to enjoy my morning coffee.
Can you paint a picture for us and tell us where you are and in the country, whereabouts in the country, what the weather's like?
Yeah, I'm in Flagstaff, Arizona. It's a lovely day here today. I have not stepped foot outside yet, but the skies are bright blue. And we've got a lot of pollen here this time of year from all the pine trees, because we're in the largest ponderosa pine forest in the world here. And I'm just kind of like warming up for the day, enjoying my coffee, chatting with you all, and heading out for an easy run after this.
Awesome. Sounds like a good morning.
Yeah.
So we're just going to start with a few kind of getting to know you questions. And I'd love to know, I know you've been racing in Europe recently, and it's something that I listen to a lot of podcasts. I'm a bit of a podcast junkie, a lot of American trail running podcasts. And there's always chat about the food at aid stations. And I'm just really interested to know what your thoughts are about, say whatever you want about European checkpoints versus American aid stations in terms of the food, because it is really different, right?
Yeah, no, I think so. I think a lot of the European races more commonly have like meat and cheese and things like that, neither of which I eat. So I'm often not even like my eyes aren't even stopping at that spot of the table. And I'm usually bringing my own like gels and then grabbing like, you know, chips is like the universal aid station love language, I think. Like, I can always find some potato chips, which is the thing I'm usually hunting for, or some soda. So the things that we share in common are fortunately the things that I'm craving.
Okay, fantastic.
Can I just jump in there? You talk about aid stations, Rachel, and I apologize for this, but I've never gone anywhere where there's had an aid station. There's someone often give me a cup of water, or something and said, "Go on, Phil." But an aid station. Talk us through that. I mean, I'm putting two and two together, and I'm thinking, Abby and you, Rachel, both do long distance running, and aid stations are places that you can a rest and refuel and maybe change socks and shoes and kit. Can you talk us through, both of you, I guess, what an aid station is and what separates a good one from a bad one?
Ooh, that's a great question. Above all, what I really love about an aid station is this kind of like surge of energy you get from seeing people and maybe hearing cowbells or music. And it's like this kind of return to the race atmosphere after like, you know, maybe being like out in the forest by yourself for many miles or, you know, like not catching many miles with runners. It's like a good, just like a good energy boost. And then like, I also find it like a good opportunity to kind of check in with myself, because you'll often like go to start talking and realize, oh wow, I'm like a little out of it right now, or I could use some of this, or, I need some electrolytes. So it's like kind of a good check-in opportunity at the same time. So those are like, I think, two of the things that maybe separate an aid station from just like a standard kind of like water pit stop. But then of course there's, you know, like on a literal level, like you'll often get to aid stations where there's like people making quesadillas, or like I got to one in a race in Spain once where they had like these huge 3 foot wide pans of paella they're making with like the grandmothers like out like making their amazing recipes. So like, it's like kind of like a bit of like a cultural moment at the same time too, of where you might be in the world.
And does that make a difference to how you take on the rest of the race?
Yeah, I think so, because I think it really reconnects me with the community of where I'm at. It's like the opportunity to see, yeah, just what the local culture of, you know, volunteers and runners might be like. Maybe you're hearing some local music, or like a race in Japan I did once. It was really quiet in the aid station. It was like very peaceful and silent. And like, there was, you know, like one person quietly communicating with you about like what you might need to take. But it was like in Japan, it was like this moment of calm. And so you kind of see a different side of, or you just see it, you know, what the place is like kind of through the aid station. And as I sit here and compare them in my head, and I'm realizing that even more so. Yeah.
I love that. Yeah. And also presumably like you've had to kind of really refine your aid station kind of etiquette, and you go like you're in and out, right? Because you're on the clock and you want to be as quick as possible.
Yeah, totally. Like admittedly, I'm always like really, trying to get in and out of aid stations quick, but the seconds or minutes that I'm there, I do really love them a lot. And it's like, I think it's a part of what makes up our sports DNA a bit, like these little moments to all connect out in these random places and in our low points and our high points, wherever they might find us.
Good stuff. We'd love to know kind of a little bit more about you, Abby, for people who maybe aren't as aware of you. Tell us a little bit about how you got into trail running and ultimately ultra running. Was it something that you were into as a child? Was it something that was encouraged in your household? Tell us, paint us a little picture.
Yeah, absolutely. I ran my first race when I was in fifth grade. So as a kid, my family signed up for this summer race series. We were living in Vermont in the United States at the time. And I did my first race and won a pie, and I was like, this is pretty cool. I can get into this. Like, there's like the kids age group usually, and not a lot of kids would do it. So I could often just go and be like, feel like the best at it. And I think that like got in my head at a young age of like, you know, like trying to win my age category, trying to like, you know, like set a better time. And I really like enjoyed that personal competitive aspect to it from a young age. Signed up for cross country in the fall in middle school, which is like, here in the States, probably when the earliest like running programs would start in schools. And then started running track as well. And, you know, really just fell in love with like this really great group of kids that like love to go out and run. And we'd go like run in the forest after school. And it was just like this, like I have so many happy memories of those teams early on. excuse me. And yeah, continued that really through high school when we moved back to the Chicago area for my high school years. Really started to take it a bit more seriously then. And the team, you know, really in high school for me was like a family at the time. And we were just, you know, we all had such like big goals together. And of course it wasn't like always a smooth journey and I didn't meet most of my high school goals, but like I was really in love with the process of trying. And yeah, continued through college. And I think really like anyone who's maybe run in school programs can attest to, you kind of wake up the day after the program's over and you're like, all right, what's next? There's no coach waiting for me at practice. There's no, you know, group that like wants to make sure I'm like, you know, showing up for the workout. It's just me now. So where am I going to take this? Is this like still fun for me on my own? And for me, like I didn't have all the answers, but I knew that like that next day and the next day, I still wanted to go for a run. And for a while there, like it was really this kind of really personal thing I was doing. Like I was never running with people. It was usually at night, like after work or whatever. And I'd go to, like, I was living in cities at the time. Like I lived in Chicago and then Los Angeles, and we'd go like run on the sidewalks and then parks and everything like after work. And yeah, it was just kind of this quiet part of my life. Like, I feel like I would have friends that maybe didn't even know that I ran. It was just kind of something I quietly did. Signed up for some marathons during this time. And yeah, like it's not like looking back now, I think that that was a really meaningful part of me deciding kind of what I wanted to do next with running. I wasn't like super great at marathons or anything like that, but I definitely took it seriously still, because I think any time where we're showing up for something and trying to put our best foot forward, that's a serious thing. And that's a really meaningful journey to go through, like whatever the time is. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, like during this time, I was starting to make a lot of trips out to the mountains in California. And I was going under in the context of climbing, but would often come back and then catch up on my marathon running back in LA. And I kind of like wasn't putting two and two together that I could be out in the mountains over the weekend and go see a huge stretch of trail. And so I started to become curious about this, started to do some longer hikes, and started to kind of hear about the sport a little bit more, listening to podcasts, reading books. There's this kind of curiosity of this, what felt at the time like an underground community of people out running trails and maybe doing all distances. And mm-hmm. So yeah, that really drew me in at the right time in my life. And I decided to move to Boulder, Colorado, where I could, yeah, really pursue it. And most importantly, be a part of a community of people who wanted to go like get muddy and lost on the weekend and have an epic and a storm and like, you know, come share their story about it, like over a beer afterwards. Like that whole ethos really drew me in. And then really from there, it was like me kind of continuing to like find my own best, which has led me to pursuing the sport at a more competitive level. And I now run for the Adidas Terex trail running team and get to run in great races all over the world. And it's yeah, really special to me that this sport keeps finding a foothold in my life, kind of in ever-evolving ways.
Abby, there's a really interesting point that I think I'm going to pick up on there, if I may. And it's something that you see in the UK as well, right? Is that when people leave school, when there isn't structured sports at school, there's this huge drop-off of activity. With men, it generally then picks up again when they start getting beer bellies. And with women, I think it's when after they've had children, really, to try and get their figures back. That seems to be the trend. And what happens is that 16 or 18 after that, when there's no sports at school, people just disappear. Do you think where you were brought up in Vermont, and I've been to Vermont a few times, and it's absolutely beautiful, right? And I've been up into the mountains and I've been in the woods that you described. Do you think that the fact that you were brought up and you grew up being able to run, and I've got this picture, and I'm not sure if it's true, but I see this picture of a young Abby running through the woods all carefree in nature. Do you think that really established your love for the sport and allowed you, when you finished school, to be able to take it on without just dropping out?
I definitely think so. I think there was always a really simple, natural love of running for me. And that is what kept me returning for more, because, you know, even the, you know, competitive goals that I had, like in high school and college, like not meeting those goals wasn't a determining factor in whether I would keep enjoying it the next day and the next day. Like, it was kind of like, all right, yeah, so I might not have, you know, made it to nationals or ever been all state in high school or whatever. Like, that's behind me. At the end of the day, I just love this and want to go keep doing it. And I like the structure it provides to my day, my life. I like the people that it has led me to. And so kind of all of those surrounding factors, you know, yeah, really have made me keep enjoying it over the years. But like, even just on a personal level, like even when I didn't have a community around it, it was still really meaningful to me and powerful to me that like wherever life found me, whether it was like that I was like living paycheck to paycheck or, you know, trying to like move forward in my career or like things that I was going through, like in my young 20s, like running was always there for me. And that's one thing I remember my high school coach saying is like, running is always like this friend that's like there for you when you need it. And so I think a big part of it too is this idea of like running being this kind of way of accessing my deeper self and kind of checking in with myself, you know, letting my thoughts roam and kind of having those moments as an individual. And, you know, I think that's like one thing that makes the community of running rich is like that it does give us all these like tools for, I don't know, for knowing ourselves in a deeper level as individuals. And then bringing that together in a group is like, I think just a great recipe for community, because we're all like being vulnerable, having hard moments, having good moments. Like, that's just like living to me. And running's just kind of a mirror for that.
So you said that you moved to Boulder, Colorado, and Boulder's kind of like a mecca, right, for runners in the US. And yeah. isn't there this phrase called Boulder average? Like, if you're Boulder average, then you've got like a 2-hour 20 marathon and you're sponsored. Like, that's kind of just your average person in Boulder. So like, how did that kind of play in? Because your running journey sounds like before it was quite personal and probably continues to be quite personal, but within Boulder there's such a huge running community and it's kind of such a fabric of that place. How did you find that adjustment?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely an adjustment when I moved there, especially because I'd been so much running by myself and then got to a place where I was like going to all these group runs in town. It seemed like there was one like every night of the week where you could, you know, like show up and I could be like, hi, I'm Abby. Want to be friends? Want to go run some miles? And it's where I met my husband, Cordis. And so, yeah, like those kind of community runs, like a lot of those people are still like dear friends to me, even though we now live in another state. It's like, yeah, really rich community in Boulder. Yeah. And I think at the time it was pretty cool because some of my first friends there were friends that were doing really big things in the sport. And it was, I think, a way of me maybe getting a glimpse of things that like I kind of dreamed of being capable of, but like it helped put it together for me where it was like, oh yeah, like, you know, this friend that I'm like catching daily runs with and, you know, like doing some training with, like she just went and had this like big performance. And like, I wonder if I can do that too. And so it really made things feel accessible for me in a cool way. And I don't know if I would have seen myself as being capable of those things if I hadn't been in a community where that kind of excellence was so, I don't want to say common, but just so part of the fabric of the place. Yeah.
And did you think that, I'm just picturing myself in that space, did you feel as though that was something that you had to aspire to, or did it come naturally, do you think?
I think it kind of came, well, no. I mean, a little bit of both, I would say. There was definitely, I was naturally drawn into this idea of trying to get really good at it and trying to be excellent at trail running and ultra running. But the success there did not come naturally, I would say. It took me, I would say a good handful of years there for me to really start to put together races that I felt were that potential I had kind of dreamed of. It was not an easy path there. Definitely plenty of races that I went into thinking I could win this race, and ended up being against the cutoffs and in the back of the field. So it's a humbling sport. And I would say a blend of being naturally drawn in, but really wrestling to find my way to where I hope to be.
So you hinted at it earlier, that you're a designer as well as a professional athlete. So it's really interesting to know how you kind of balance the two things. And were there any, challenges that you faced when you became a professional athlete that maybe you weren't expecting?
Yeah. So let's see. So I, right now I'm at a place where I'm not really taking on much design work. And that's a choice I made about a year ago. Prior to that, had about 10 years where I was a full-time graphic designer, UI design, visual design. And then maybe 2 or 3 years there where I was overlapping both. So I've gotten a taste of kind of all ranges of it, from, majority of my years as a running adult being working 9 to 5 and then fitting running in around that, a few years being balancing both. And I think the challenge for me in balancing both was really oftentimes just for better or worse, it's you come back after a bad race or a hard week of weekend of training and you're back at work and you don't need to talk about it. You don't need to dwell on it. Some days that can be the best thing. Sometimes you need more time to process it. But I think for me that the choice to go full time as a runner was kind of aligning my heart space with how I was spending my time. And I feel like I had grown to a place where, 90% of my available hours were being spent on a job that had 15 to 20% of my heart. And then this rare nuggets of time were being spent totally where my heart was. And I had the opportunity to kind of make that leap to align those things. And right now that's working really well for me. And I love my design career and I love that I can step back into that if I ever want to. But I'm also really enjoying not just running professionally for myself right now, but being able to spend more time being involved with our team, supporting my teammates, getting to do things talk with kids about goal setting or help with certain things, certain projects and things I want to be a part of. And so I'm enjoying seeing just the other things that quote full-time running is making me available for. And that's been a nice change of pace. But it's definitely a hard thing to balance both of them. And I have a lot of appreciation for my time doing that. And a lot of good memories as well. There's a, it's balance, I guess, so to speak, has been something I've been constantly addressing and is kind of ever evolving for me, like it is many of us. So
yeah, it's like balance. What does that mean?
I know. Some of the times where I've been the most quote like balanced, where people are like, wow, you're doing X and Y and Z, that you are so balanced. I'm like, I don't feel balanced at all. I feel like a mess. And yeah, that can be the reality of balance oftentimes.
You're an elite professional athlete now. Does that feel like a job at any time?
Yeah, definitely. I think there's, you know, like I'm involved like kind of in a lot of ways with my work as an athlete for Adidas Terex, like, you know, helping with products or like this campaign I was just a part of and things like that. That's definitely kind of like the, you know, the job part of it in terms of like meetings and projects and things like that. But then also like, you know, on a training level, like making it a focus is, definitely something that I there's been new things to adjust to. Like, for example, like this week I've had like a little niggle in my leg pop up, and it's like, you know, managing that in my head is certainly something where I'm like not trying to read too much into it, but it's also like, you know, a big part of my day if I need to like take an off day or like go get some body work done, and like while still keeping it in perspective, you know, it's easy for those things to like, you know, take up more space than they should. And so yeah, like managing that has been an unexpected part of making athletics my focus.
And is you know, if your job is running long ways, and the tools of your trade are your feet and your legs and your body, does that mean that therefore if you want to go skiing or you want to go scuba diving or you want to chop down a tree in the backyard or something, do these kind of things play into your daily life and how you have to approach it?
I would say so. You know, Cordis and I do a lot of like DIY projects, like on our house, or like we have a camper van. Like right now I'm building out a little toilet box in our van. that's my project today that I'm going to be working on.
Nice.
So yeah, like there's all sorts of little like projects that I think take up space physically in my life that I kind of just see as like, I don't know, like time on feet training. So yeah, like it's definitely something that's always in the back of my brain though. And like, yeah, staying healthy, managing my body is definitely like, yeah, at the forefront of how I'm spending my days. And I think one thing that's changed since working full time is like taking like body work and physio work like more seriously, like going and seeing someone regularly, making the time and space for that. And like, you know, investing in myself in that way. That's something that I've started to take a lot more seriously in the last year or so,
if I can sound dumber than I normally sound anyway, can we just have an understanding of, for someone who's doing your kind of distances, and first of all, let's understand what you mean by an ultra runner. What does that mean for you?
I would say doing races longer than a marathon.
So you regularly do that?
I do. I would say I don't race a crazy amount. I'm maybe racing 4 or 5 times a year, but then there's a lot of training runs that do exceed marathon distance. But that's not like every day or every week or something like that. You know, like I would say, you know, maybe 75% of my year's training doesn't look that different from a marathon training, but like, you know, but it's, I guess, different in that it's on the trails, maybe taking up greater duration with like a lot of elevation gain. So yeah, like I think, I would say in the summer, my volume picks up a lot more, where I'm getting in a lot more of those big kind of like weekends in the mountains where the miles are really adding up. But it's not like that every day or anything like that.
And what are the physiological impacts, or the physical, what's the word I'm looking for, results of doing that many miles that often and doing the big long thing? How does your body react to it? How do you suffer? What do you have to watch out, because I'm just someone like myself who doesn't do long miles, and I'm sure there's people who are listening to this will think, okay, well, I did a 10K yesterday, my legs hurt. You know, you're doing maybe 50K or 100K sometimes. How do you work with your body that's different to someone like myself or someone who does a park run? Park run is like a 5K every Saturday morning. What's going on that's different in your body?
Well, you know, the way I might explain it is that, like, a lot of those longer runs I'm doing, I'm spending almost like, if you could think of your lowest gear on a bike, where you're just kind of like chugging away, like going up a big hill, you know, that's like where a lot of my time is spent, where it's like, it's the intensity is often a lot lower. But that being said, like, I think as I've, you know, started to log more years in the sport, there's kind of like these, you know, this graph you could imagine over time of where, like where I'm starting to kind of approach trying to really run, you know, when I'm racing 100K, running every mile as fast as I can. So like the intensity might look lower, but over the course of 100K, like I might be like redlining like for that whole time. But it's like an art kind of trying to figure out how to do that without going out too hard. And you're kind of constantly managing these variables of, you know, like effort and pace and intensity. So like oftentimes for me, like especially with like big climbs and the terrain that I'm running, that means like power hiking. And so like I think from the outsider, you know, it might seem like, oh, like, you know, you're spending like half of your long run walking, but it's like, you know, it's to me like the right power hike is like effort wise doesn't feel all that different from like, you know, an easy run pace on the flat. So it's like, I think this idea of stripping away kind of time and pace a little bit and really just being in touch with your body and the train that you're on. And so I always like to say like the, you know, kind of the best tool like an ultra runner can have is just like, you know, a well-calibrated, like personal sense of like rate of perceived exertion, you know, like just knowing your body and how hard you're actually going is something that's taken me years to learn, even with years of running experience before that. And so, yeah, I'd say that that's like a way I would describe kind of like what my body's doing at that distance. Other things that like I, you know, had to get used to are like certainly like eating a ton all the time. Eating while running is another big part of it. You know, making sure I'm getting enough like carbohydrates per hour while I'm out there on long runs is like a big make or break part of ultra running and something that I think takes getting used to for people adjusting to it.
Rachel, I'm going to let you get a question in a minute, but there's one, I'm feeling this at the moment. It sounds very mathematical really to me. You know, are you working with graphs and okay, I need to take this amount of calories in and I'm going to be doing this amount of exertion and I'm looking at my watch and I'm running at this pace and I'm burning these amount of calories. So if I go any much faster, I'm going to be gone. I'm going to max out. I'm going to bonk or whatever at this time. So I have to ease it down. And how much of that is learned and how much of that is that you're relying on technology and how much of that is there's someone in your ear or your coach or whatever saying, no, Abby, slow the hell down because you're not going to be able to manage that. And how much of that graph, let's call it, can you push? How far of that envelope can you push until your body's saying no, but your mind's kind of still saying yes? And where does it all fall apart? And that's, you know, we're talking about fine lines and balances, aren't we? And I'm just interested from yourself where that sits and how you manage that.
Well, you know, I work with a coach, my coach, Jason Koop. He does, you know, he does all the, like, the science for me so that I don't have to worry about that. That's kind of how I always put it. Like, he's assigning my duration and my workouts, you know, helping me come up with, like, how much, you know, what my specific numbers are of, like, calories per hour and salt and things like that. So fortunately, like, he makes that part of my job easy. But I would almost describe it a little bit like if you were to ask, like, I guess I think of those variables in my run as something that I've become more in tune with kind of in a natural way over just logging hours and hours of training. So like, I would almost compare it to like a musician where like, if you ask them to break down, like, well, how do you come up with like a good beat? Like, I'm sure they could make it so that it was almost scientific where it's like, okay, like these are the important building blocks to like a good sound. And, you know, but there's also something that just happens by feel over time, I'm sure. Like if you asked any of those musicians, like there's a way that where you could approach it almost mathematically, or you could learn to approach it by just by feel. And I feel that a bit with logging lots of training where you start to get to a place where you just, you kind of know, okay, like, yes, technically like every 30 minutes I need fuel, but like also just you start to pick up on your body's signals of that in really subtle ways when you spend a lot of time doing it. And then kind of the same with that, like with intensity, like knowing when to back off, when you can push it a bit is something that just kind of starts to feel more like a dance for me over time than it does like a, you know, anything too scientific. And that's also just how my brain is wired. So that approach kind of works for me.
And that's worked for you in your races. And I'm thinking specifically only because I've been there is the UTMB and the CCC that you did. When was that, 2 or 3 years ago or something, where you got a podium place? Can you talk a little bit about that? First of all, what that race is, what it involves, the atmosphere, and how you approached it.
Yeah, absolutely. So that was last year, the 2021 UTMB CCC race, which is, for those who don't know, UTMB Ultra Trail Mont Blanc is a race series around the Mont Blanc Massive. And so CCC is the 100K distance of that race, starting in Italy and, ultimately ending up finishing in France, working, you know, kind of making your way around the mountain. And so, yeah, it's a race that I've done twice now. I did it in 2019 and then, yeah, again in 2021, and I'll do it again this summer. So it's one that I love a lot. And like, to me, that terrain is really special because, it's not only like a really kind of sacred place in our sport, but it's also just some really great trail running. A really fun blend of steep climbs, steep descents, gradual descents, fast running, fast hiking. And to me, that race just offers like a little bit of everything and is like, I mean, I just love that distance for like mountain running. It's you start, you have breakfast, you start, you finish, you're able to go to sleep at night, at least like the time I'm running, I'm able to do that. And so for me, that feels like a pretty fun day's work. I love that race a lot.
And it's a magical place as well, though, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Start, I think, in Courmayeur up in the Italian Alps and go through to Switzerland and then back into Chamonix, I guess, all under the auspicious eye of the Mont Blanc, which is quite amazing. How do you approach that race? Because I did read an article. I did do some homework on this, Rachel. So some homework, and it sounded fascinating that that you went out quite hard and carried, like you said, carried on hard, and were almost I think you were in third place towards the end, and then took another position. Can you talk about a race experience like that, and what goes through your head and how you approach it for that? How long did it take you to do that, first of all? Because there's a lot of elevation, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. So I believe my time was just like right around 13 hours exactly. That's 100K with, 21,000 feet of climbing or something like that.
That's so fast. I'm just trying to get my head around that.
Maybe it depends on, like, for people who aren't trail running, it probably sounds really slow, but I think, yeah, once you're like out there on climbs, it's like, oh yeah, this starts to feel hard. The kind of dream, right, like as an ultra runner is like this idea of being able to put together a day where you're like able to be running hard the whole time. Like, and yeah, I was able to kind of go out and achieve that where it really felt like I was able to ride that line the whole time. And the way I kind of talk about it a lot was like kind of risk taking. And going into that race, I knew I wanted to take some risks. And like even remember telling Cordis the night before, like, I want to arrive in Champs-Élysées, which was basically the halfway point. I was like, I want to arrive in Champs-Élysées, like almost unsure if I can continue. And like that's how close I want to be riding the line. But that's something that definitely took, you know, years of racing to be able to like figure out like where is that line and what is considered a risk at that distance. And and so for me it was a day of taking risks and then trusting my body, trusting that it could handle itself after taking so many risks and that it could even continue to keep taking risks. And I mean, for me, just that mentality of, you know, putting a big goal out there, taking risks to get there, trusting the body, like that's what the sport is like all about to me. And like what I love about how it kind of teaches me this deeper relationship with myself and helps me to work through issues of fear and confidence and like, you know, being present with myself, like those things all just parallel life for me in a really special way. And like, that's what keeps this interesting to me is like, is figuring out that, you know, like how all those factors live together. That's why I love this a lot. So for that day at CCC, really, like I kind of achieved my goal of arriving in Champs-Élysées, feeling like unsure if I could continue, but also I think because I had put that goal out there, I knew I was going to continue. Like I also have, you know, like not DNF'd a race before, but like that's, you know, something I think I've worked through in a lot of scenarios where I've, you know, thought I couldn't continue and did. It was a lot of trusting my body in that last half. And fortunately my teammates were all out there like on the course cheering for me, and my coach was out there supporting me, and yeah, I was able to pick off one more place on the last climb before descending into Chamonix. It was a really special day, and yeah, one that I continue to draw confidence on. And, you know, when I look to racing there again this year, it's like thinking through that same idea of like, what further risks can I take this time? And like, how can I continue to, you know, look back on the year of training since then and use that as a reminder to trust my body and the things it's capable of.
It's kind of the ultimate betting on yourself, isn't it? Like totally. seeing how far you can kind of push that line and just believing that you can do it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, I think it's how the sport continues to teach me things, which I like. I've not been someone previously that's like super confident and super fearless or anything like that. And like the sport has taught me that, and I'm really grateful for that.
I think it's interesting, Abby, that you know, throughout this interview, you've been saying since, you know, when we were young and you didn't feel that competitive or you weren't that competitive, but you stuck with it and you've grown with the sport. Mm-hmm. Do you think the sport has grown alongside you? Mm. Has it changed over those years, do you think?
I definitely think so. I mean, of course, like I've been involved in kind of different parts of it. You know, it's different like now being a part of ultra running scene versus like when I was a kid, cross country and things like that. But, you know, I think there's one of the biggest things that I see even just within ultra running in the last 5-6 years that I've been a part of it, 6 years, I think, is just like how much appreciation there is for kind of like storytelling in our sport and like following people's journeys and things like that. I think when I first got into the sport, I felt like the only way that I could like have a future in it as like a pro was like to have certain results. But I think really people are receptive above all these days to just like what you're learning, what you're experiencing, what your journey there was. And there's a lot of appreciation and appreciation for that across the sport. And I think that makes it so that there's opportunities for anyone who wants to like have this sport be a part of their lives. And I really, you know, one thing I have been saying a lot recently is this like idea of, it's not like what we do, but it's how we do it. And so I would much rather like inspire someone with how I've approached something than like what the result was and what that might've inspired. Like, cause I know that's who inspires me, are like the people that, you know, are approaching, you know, approaching their big goal with a ton of tenacity, or working with what they've got and like, you know, and doing more than they dreamed they could. And those are the kind of stories that really inspire me. And one thing that I love that our sport celebrates.
I think you're right. I don't think everyone wants to win. I think people would like to do well, but I don't think everyone necessarily aspires to cross the finishing line first, or in fact, even go to the start line.
Yeah.
Some people may just want to run. Like you said earlier, is that running is just part of you, and is as a way that you can connect with your body, and whether that's against other people, whether it's against yourself, or whether it's just to be outside in the woods as a child, listening to the birds and running with the foxes, you know, they're all as valid.
Yeah.
And all those narratives count.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think there's no right or wrong way to enjoy the trails, obviously. I mean, and that's one thing I love about it. A question I like to ask people sometimes is like, you know, especially like other, you know, people that are running like professionally, is like, okay, if this were somehow taken away from you, would you rather like pick a new sport that you could be like, continue to be really competitive at, or would you rather, you know, continue to run, but just like not competitively? And I think it's like, there's no right or wrong answer to that, obviously, but like, you know, I think some people are really drawn into like the pure competitive aspect of it. And if it wasn't running, it would be like another awesome thing they could crush at and like pursue excellence at. But like, for me, I totally would just continue to choose running, and because I really love it. And like, at the end of the day, if that means like running laps around a parking lot or like up a mountain or, you know, wherever that might take me, I enjoy.
That's wonderful. Just tell me where I'm just going to elaborate on that scenario again. Where would that running take place? Mm. If it could all finish tomorrow, but you could still run, mm-hmm. but you could only run one place, where would it be?
Oh gosh. I mean, right now I'm really loving, we just moved to Flagstaff in November, here in Arizona, and I'm just really loving the piece of the trails around here. Like a run that I do often right now is like up this really steep social trail, kind of in our backyard, like steep, hard hiking, and then like a flowy downhill with like some rolling trails back to the house at the finish. And to me, that's like the perfect run, where it's like a little bit of everything, some fast running, some hard hiking, the experience of like getting on top of something. And that's kind of like, at least right now, like a run I could totally do until like the end of time. I just love it. How about for you guys? I'd love to hear what's your run that you would keep doing forever happily?
I mean, I guess I would say probably my local trail, because I have been doing that run for a long time, especially mm-hmm. during lockdown. That was kind of my local run. I live just outside of London, so I've got some hills, but like nothing close to what you've got. But yeah, it's just, it's quiet and it's beautiful, and I get to say hello to all the dogs. Mm-hmm. And that's like, I mean, that's just my happy place. It's yeah. And I love it. Despite the fact that I run this trail every week, and mm-hmm. I pretty much do run it every week, I love it every week. And I always think I'm so, so lucky every time.
Love that.
Mm. I live in South London, and actually, do you know London at all, Abby?
Yeah, a bit. Yeah, my Anna's from there, and I got to spend some time there as a kid growing up and stuff.
So it might be surprising to know that it's one of the greenest cities on the planet, even though it hides it well. Mm-hmm. I live in South London, and there's lots of ancient woodland there. You know, they built
they built the boats to fight the Armada in the woods around the corner from me. So I go around there and I, you know, kind of say hello to some of my favorite trees and jump over some of my favorite logs there. And you know, there's a route that I can do that will take in those woods and the edges of parks, because it isn't wilderness for sure where I live. But right now I'm talking to you from a place in South Wales, which I come to once a month on the coast, on the Bristol Channel. And there's a loop from the house here. It's not long, it's about 17K, but it takes in everything. There's tarmac, there's sand dunes, there's sands, actually beach, there's rocks, they're scrambling up cliffs, there's cliff tops, like 200 feet cliff tops, and then there's a few hills, and it's wonderful. Oh. And there's quarries and wildlife and not really anybody else apart from sheep. So that would probably be, I only get to do this maybe once a month or once every 6 weeks or something like that, but that would probably be my favorite trail, because I'm familiar with it, like I think you are, and you pass certain landmarks and you kind of like have memories that you can attach to those landmarks, and you sometimes have to close a gate or something and you take a moment to just pause and suck it all in. I think it's quite important to have those routes, even though it's nice to mix it up, it's good to have something that's familiar.
I love that. I feel that with my route too, that I was mentioning, like the specific trees, or like even like you can get to know certain things of like, oh, well, I always step up onto this rock, or I always, you know, kind of go the right here, or or a run I did recently, I was really tired at the end and I was like, I know if I fork right here, I like don't have to do that last little climb and I can like coast the downhill to the end.
So something that I really enjoy, actually, and the pandemic really brought this to life for me, is running through these weeks, because I was doing it a lot more anyway, is noticing the change of season so much more. Whereas before, you wouldn't even think about it, but even just, oh, that tree is now going, is the leaves are coming out, and now there's a flower on it, and you can... It makes you smile just to know, oh, that flower's out now. And it's one flower in thousands and thousands of flowers in the woods. But you just remember that one little flower coming out in the woods. And I think it does trail running, especially because it's not super fast like cycling or mountain biking or something like that. You get the opportunity to actually take it all in, to see it and to have those moments in nature where you feel as though you're the only person to have seen that, which I think is really quite special.
I totally agree. It's like, which comes first, like the feeling of these loving our home routes, or that these routes give us like a deep appreciation of place and make wherever we are feel a little bit more like home.
And that, I guess that kind of plays into the campaign that you referenced earlier, the Find Your Summit Adidas Terex campaign that you're part of. Could you just, before, I know I'm conscious of time and that you have to go out for your run, so we don't want to keep you for much longer, but if you could just tell us a little bit about the campaign and why it's important to you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think one thing about, you know, this idea of like finding our summits, I've really enjoyed kind of like exploring this metaphor in my head, because I think it can be so easy to think that a summit is like this moment of being the best, or being the, you know, being the highest on the planet at that moment. And like, I really think that that is so personal for each of us, because there have been moments that have felt like summits to me that are probably just like the first step to someone else. And there have been, you know, moments that are the summit to me that have really felt like I'm on top of the world. And like, I think those are all so equally important. I think like one thing I love about trail running too, is like, even these routes that we do again and again, like the conditions are different. The route might feel a little different. You might take a few different steps here or there. And so I think of it as like how the route kind of to that metaphorical summit, so to speak, is different every time. And it's so different for each of us. And that, like, you know, these runs that we're each talking about, like, are each so worth celebrating. And That's the part that I love about how we can't compare, you know, our splits and our like experiences, because they're all our own. And that's one thing that, you know, just a beautiful kind of symbol from trail running that I enjoy a lot. So that's one thing I've liked about that campaign, is that concept of our own individual summits.
Okay. And to wrap it up, Abby, where does the rest of the year take you?
I think sometime in the next week or so, Cordis and I will head out in our camper van, and we'll be going out to California and training out there in the Sierra, going out to Western states, supporting some of our teammates there, going back, spending some time on the John Muir Trail, which is a place that's super special for me, doing like some fast packing in there together for fun. And then in mid-July, we'll head over to Chamonix to start getting ready for UTMB. So I'll be doing CCC again, and then Cordis is doing TDS out there. So we'll get to like be out there with our teammates training and like preparing for the race. And it's just such a special time out there. And then in the fall, I'm hoping to race once more at a race called Transvulcania in the Canary Islands. So I started my season off at a race there in the Canaries in March, and hoping to end my season out there too. So that's kind of like the travel and racing for the rest of the year. And otherwise, like in between trips and in the fall, like really excited to continue to kind of like get to know home here in Flagstaff a bit more and continue to root down here.
Excellent. Well, Abby, thank you so much for your time. I know it's valuable for everybody at the moment, but especially someone who's training for all these incredible events throughout the year. So once again, thank you for that. We wish you the best of luck. I'm sure you won't mind if any of the if you are any of the events and Black Trail Runners will ring a cowbell or give you a high five or an LA yeah. as you run past.
That's great.
Rachel.
Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you so much, Abby. That was great to get to know you a little bit better. And for everyone who I'm sure is going to want to follow your journey, where is the best place for them to find you?
Probably most active on Instagram, where my handle is abby.k.hall, H-A-L-L. You can follow along there. And I link out from there other things I'm up to on our website and stuff like that. So thank you both so much for having me. This is a great conversation. Could keep doing this all morning.
Us too. Have a great rest of your season.
Thank you so much. And I might be in London actually after UTMB. So maybe I could come join one of your group runs sometime.
That
would be awesome.
Please do. We'd love you to come. We're doing one in Epping Forest, are we, sometime?
We are. Yeah, we'll link up, Abby.
We'll have to do one now.
I'd love that. Let's be in touch about that. Yeah, love to share some miles with you both in person.
Thank you for joining us at The Checkpoint.
If you've enjoyed this conversation, please subscribe and share online.
Also, please remember to leave your review on the podcast platform that you selected, as it really helps our podcast to grow.
Your support helps make this podcast possible.
Remember, if you have any questions, get in touch with us via our Instagram page at Black Trail Runners, or if you want to join our community, please search Facebook for Black Trail Runners and connect with us.